Hey everybody, welcome to episode number 6 of Circuit Breaker Podcast. It's kind of changed a little bit. I've lost a co-host. It started up again. Today I have guest Kurt Kelly with me.
Good morning.
Kurt's got a huge background on all sorts of cool stuff. So why don't you give us your background?
Sure. So a little over 20 years in technology at the moment. Started out in the internet space, late 90s, and from there moved over into IT. Did IT for quite some time as a consultant, and decided to make a switch over to wireless, and that's where I've been stuck ever since and been happy.
Right, and wireless, we used to be red versus blue for the longest time. I came from Innovation Center at one carrier, and you came from the other Innovation Center, right? And specifically, you focus more on the hardware side, right?
Correct. And actually, I can say I've been red and blue, but not AT&T blue. I was actually former Altel, and which we obviously converted over to red in 2009.
So, right. Yeah, there was a little bit of a merger thing. Yeah. We can always go back in the memory lane on that. So then what are you up to now? Yeah, I know you're out of we both got tired of innovation going too slowly in the big giant telcos. Relevant right now is, you know, everybody's kind of scared about net neutrality and everything else, and so we're trying to go around that. I know there's another podcast and another huge analyst article that was fantastic about it. But so what are you up to now?
Yeah, so you hit the nail on the head, actually. The innovation was moving really slow, and you know, working for one of the bigger carriers, it's always been a challenge with how do you get to market quickly and how do you capitalize on different things that are changing at a rapid pace. And so taking that, I still wanted to stay in the hardware / total overall solution state. And so really been focused on a lot of the startups that are really creative in what we would consider, I guess, emerging technologies. And so still keeping the hardware focus because it's really a means to an end, but really focusing more on how do we capture information from the new stuff that's going on with machine learning, big data, analytics. You know, and then also playing that back into how do we really capitalize on the monetization of data?
So, you know, that's the big thing, right? Yeah. Everybody's saying, oh, there's so many IoT things coming out, this, that, and the other is happening. But we're not seeing, you know, the real true monetization. Everybody keeps on saying, we're not seeing monetization. I think it's finally happening. This last year, we finally started seeing money come in from IoT and everything else. Yeah. What's been the exciting project from 2017 that you've done? And then what are the cool things you're excited about 2018?
Yeah, so, you know, 2017 was very interesting for me because of, even though blockchain's been around for, before it was called blockchain, kind of like IoT before it was IoT.
My favorite example, and I know I've said this a million times on the podcast and in real life, is Twister the movie is IoT.
Right.
And that's 1996.
Right. So. And so that really was bringing the focus together under an umbrella nomenclature, if you will, called blockchain. Right. And really, how does that fit into IoT? Because one of the biggest security concerns in IoT has obviously always been security. And how do we secure things? And so I think it's giving people an opportunity to look at an easier way to secure something from birth, if you will, not just encrypting the transmission through, you know, VPN or private network or anything like that, but how do you control the data? And how do you encrypt the data from the time that it is conceived from the sensor all the way back to the back end, and then also look at data at rest? And so blockchain, I've got several projects I've been working on in that particular space. The monetization still is the question, you know, because it's some people see data as too valuable to sell, and some people want to sell everything that they capture. And so it's trying to help them understand really where they fit in the market and what's going to be the sweet spot.
Well, and that's a dangerous slippery slope, right? Selling everything is also kind of scary to the end user as well. I mean, that depends on the end user and what that monetization comes off of it. But at the same time, you know, as a consumer and customer, we're always scared that, am I giving too much away? Am I giving my identity away? As a large corporation, you could be giving your trade secrets away, something else, your secret sauce, you know, whatever you're doing to make yourselves valuable in the market. So yeah, I mean, you know, what's been the fine balance on that?
Yeah. So you hit on something really sensitive, because within data today, we don't have a choice. You know, people say that you lost privacy the day that the iPhone launched because you you clicked accept to the terms and conditions. And from that point forward, privacy was gone. You know, and to some extent, that's true. You look at any of the apps and, you know, the App Store or iTunes, and most people don't take the time to look at permissions. and you look at just really what you're giving back for that quote-unquote free app.
Right.
And so with blockchain, that's another one of the things that I personally care about is whenever you own the data, you own the data. You're the one that has the opportunity to allow someone to use the data because it's yours. So take, for instance, you know, one of the founders I'm working with, you know, he's, I wouldn't say an elderly man, but he's in age. And his biggest concern is, how do we keep from people doing age discrimination? Because if you just Google my name, you can come up and find my age. Well, if you're an employer and you're out looking for employees and you've got somebody that comes in, they give a resume, you haven't seen that person, but yet you could do a quick Google search, find their age, and automatically start putting them in a category. And you know, there's some pretty serious issues there.
Well, and it's the reverse too, right? It's just it's everything. It's age. It's young, old. It's, you know, my favorite was one of the employers I was working with. They were saying, "Oh yeah, I Google the person's address and see what kind of." Mm-hmm. What kind of area they live in to determine it, are they worth hiring or not. I'm like, that's the goofiest thing I've ever heard.
True.
But it's also going back to your privacy. And then my other favorite statement on all this stuff is, so Google Street View. In Europe, you're allowed to mask off your house. I don't know in the U.S. what the laws are entirely because I haven't seen a house masked off. I know businesses I've seen masked off. So the house, like, number one, call it, and house number 5 were visible. Number 3 was blurred out on Google Street View in Germany. Now that person got their house egged like crazy because they were blurred out and people were not super huge fans of that. What's really interesting is it's easier to find, you know, that obvious needle in a haystack versus being a needle in a pile of needles, because now you're part of the noise and part of the data and everything else. So maybe there's a way to, you know, obfuscate and everything else in the data. And I don't, have you played with any of that?
Not yet. I can say it that way. Not yet. there's some people that I would say there's pre-proof of concepts, really at the ideation stage still, that they're looking at how do we do that and do it to where, you know, you want to have, obviously you want to have anonymity to a degree, but at the same time, you still want to be able to have some form of a human judgment, because if you don't, then you turn yourself into a machine and all you're doing is walking around completely anonymous to the whole world. And that there's no real benefit to that.
No, I mean, you know, it's both sides, right? So we want to have Siri tell us, hey, you need to get ready and going. I had my phone tell me, hey, you need to get to Nerdvana today, which, by the way, thank you to Nerdvana for letting us use podcast, but or booth, but you know, leave at this time and you're ready to go. And that's huge. And now there's a machine knowing that I come here pretty regularly and everything else. My phone tells me every morning what time to leave for work, things like that. So yes, you're right. I mean, if you're completely anonymous, my phone wouldn't be able to do that. But at the same time, where do we draw the line for you know, the things that don't make any sense, like age discrimination, and then, you know, figuring out what not to do, right? So,
well, and that's the beautiful power is you give choice back to the individual. And so I think it's individualized. You know, I mean, obviously you can look at different generations which have, you know, different thought processes on this most of the time. Some of them are in line. But I would say that's really the power behind it is the same thing as going to Facebook or LinkedIn and choosing on your own what kind of security measures you want to implement. You know, some people benefit from that. Some people don't care. You know, it's just, I am who I am. I don't care who knows what I am.
You know? I think it's a good chunk of us that work in technology. We learned how to do it so we could be seen and not seen when we wanted to be. So for 2018, what's got you excited?
Yeah, 2018, you know, there's a lot of money that's being put towards the emerging technology market, obviously, and that's, I hope to see that continue, because one of the things that I think is paramount is execution on the strategy that's been put forth. And there's been a lot of really good strategies that have been put into the, you know, in past the ideation and going into proof of concept, but now the execution piece of it is critical, because, you know, just as an example, I was reading a statistic the other day and kind of looking at where the VC funding, and I'm not, you know, promoting by any stretch cryptocurrencies, but just looking at you know, what the investment market looked like. And so in 2014, there was a very, very large amount of money put into that from a VC perspective, put into those companies. Well, whenever those companies launched their coins, we're now looking at only, I want to say the last percentage was like 90% of all those people within 3.5 years now that they've had their funding, they still don't have a token or a coin that's being used. And so I think that that's proving back to the VC that they made good investments, proving back to the, you know, the seed funding, the angels, you know, all the different guys with the money, proving back to them that there is value and benefit. So I think 2018 is definitely execution year on all the emergent stuff.
Well, and it's really exciting. I mean, the news last week broke, and I don't know if it was last week or week before, my weeks are a little blurred together. PwC in Hong Kong is now, and the Big Four are all very heavily utilizing cryptocurrency for payments, for any of the banking things they're up to. And I mean, if you think about it, these are the big guys. They're like essentially the banks at this point.
That's right.
They're just as tied to, you know, the big banks like Goldman Sachs or JP Morgan or anything else like that, if you think of PwC and Deloitte. And the fact that they're so heavily, heavily relying on it offshore, you know, it's kind of interesting to watch to see what happens next there.
Most definitely.
And 10,000, I think, what is Bitcoin up to as of this podcast?
It's been some fluctuation. I think right now it's sitting about 9,500, but last week we saw, it hit 10. I think, I'm trying to remember, I was taking screenshots as I was watching it go up and down that day. And I can't remember. I think it did hit 11, if I'm not mistaken.
You might be right.
And then it was like, it started coming back down. I was like, okay, I'm going to wait. And then I'm going to buy in whenever it crashes, you know. And so I was, is this the bubble? You know, and then it started coming back up. And I was like, well, crap, that wasn't the bubble. You know, so it's, still playing that game. But you're right. You know, it's the creative thought processes behind the networks that are utilizing this as a mechanism for funding. Some of them have some really, really deep roots into, you know, philanthropic thought processes. You know, how do we, and sustainability is another big one as well, which almost is kind of counterintuitive nowadays to think something's going to sustain. But, you know, it's how do we make the earth more sustainable, just as an example. Right. So one of the companies that I've been advising, they're, you know, dealing heavily on, how do we do something in the waste industry and use blockchain to be able to make that not only transparent, but also make it, you know, more interesting for them to learn how to disrupt that particular market.
And more secure.
And more secure, absolutely. A lot of people don't realize there's a lot of money in waste. So it's quite an interesting thought process.
Well, I think it's kind of funny. I think we got told about it just recently in a more interesting way, in the sense of Houston ran out of landfill space. Dallas ran out of landfill space because they were taking on some of Houston's garbage, and the mounds of garbage coming out of the recent hurricane and all of the disaster there earlier this year.
Yeah.
And so now they're trying to figure out what to do with all of this extra stuff that, you know, was destroyed because of natural disaster.
That's right. And I think that, you know, to go along with that, there's another concern as well. It is politically charged, but, you know, there's some speculation that you start looking at who our alliances are around the world. And whenever we started seeing some hiccups recently, then we see that, you know, we see China that basically refused solid waste from us. And, you know, at that point, it's like
solid waste back.
And it's cheaper. That's the craziest thing is, whenever you look at the numbers, it's cheaper for us to ship waste to China than it is for us to ship waste from Texas to Chicago. Just as it's the craziest thing. So, you know, it's 2018. You know, the other thing I would say too, that's a really heavy focus as well, is cybersecurity. You know, which is obviously becoming more and more important.
That is too funny. That is too funny.
Yeah.
What do you think? What's the other big vertical you're looking at outside of? I mean, waste was a new one. I didn't even think about that, but you're absolutely correct.
Yeah.
You know, blockchain and waste. What else? I don't even know. What else are you looking at for 2018? Mm-hmm. I know you've got a lot of cool projects you're holding back on.
Right.
Because we're talking about this. But what do you want to talk? I mean, like, you know, what other cool things are out there in IoT? Even on the industrial. I mean, yeah, the other funny part about IoT, and we were talking about this, we've talked about this a million times, is it's more often than not, we see it as a industrial thing, or not even industrial, but enterprise related thing. So we don't ever actually see it on the consumer side, right? A lot of this podcast, when I originally started it, was more talking about, hey, what's going on with consumer? And my role very much so for my day job is very consumer related. But it's funny, is all of that stuff is it's enterprise driving consumer and consumer driving enterprise, both on the IoT side. So what do you see that something that, you know, the average listener would be seeing in like the next couple of months, maybe first quarter or something like that? What do you see from them?
You know, the biggest thing that I would say, you know, a lot of people that kind of thinking through the artificial intelligence and machine learning side of things, there's going to be some, let's call it enablers that are really happening through the bot space. You know, obviously there's pros and cons and, you know, pluses and negatives to bots, but on the positive side, there's a really big focus on simplifying people's lives for convenience. And to do that by creating a method of them being able to make those changes. And that really comes from looking at how do we take, just as an example, as I'm watching a router and switch behind you flashing lights. If I was an admin, but I didn't really know what I was doing, so home user, I buy, you know, whatever brand router I want to use, but I need to make sure that it's secure, but I want to be able to change the password on my router, but I don't know how to go in and do all the complex functions. How much simpler would it be to open up a website and simply, just like a Google page, what do you want me to do? Type in what you want them to do, and the bot goes and does it for you.
Actually, and that's a great one. Alexa just announced today more enterprise functionality for their functions, right? So Alexa at Work is the new one. Mm. Or not today, earlier this week. And so, you know, that was also really interesting, right? Because now it's Alexa, you know, there's two things. There's macros, so like, let's wake up is one of the ones they were promoting, and so it turns on your heater and thermostat and everything else related. And then it also does a few other things like, you know, turn on your lights and stuff like that. But to your point, it's like, Alexa, help me change my password to, you know, like coffee or something, right? And so yeah, you're right. The bots are really interesting. I mean, it's taking over, and it's not just bots in the sense of what we imagine with like AIM chat bots. Mm-hmm. It's more, let's do it in a seamless way, I feel like.
And seamless is a good way of putting it. So think about the number of times that we've heard somebody talk about design and user interface, user experience, you know, all the different things that go along with that from a design perspective visually. But now look at it from voice. And so now instead of having what we call a GUI or, you know, a graphical user interface, now it's a voice user interface, which exactly what Alexa is doing. And so you look at how do we do that with a, you know, like an NLP or a natural language progression or process, is how do we be able to differentiate voices? How do we differentiate functions based on what they're told, what they're not told? You know, so there's a lot of different things that are going on behind the scenes there as well. But it's in overall, it's to simplify our life, you know, so that we can do more meaningful things than sit behind a computer and change our password. That's to most people a waste of time. I just want to, hey, so and so, change my password and it's done.
That's what it was for Alexa. I couldn't remember the example, and you just reminded me of it. So it was now sit behind a computer. I mean, just for our old lives, requesting time off. That's what it was. Alexa, you can tell Alexa at the office, Alexa, I'd like to have Monday and Tuesday off from work, and it would go set the series of chains of events of that stuff to go figure it out, what Monday and Tuesday were, what the dates were. I need to cut out 8 hours in those 2 days from like my what kind of PTO or flex or whatever the craziness was. It would all figure that out for you, because that takes like 20 minutes of your day.
Absolutely.
And I need that 20 minutes to work on a slide deck or something.
That's right. And you know, and another thing to say, to point to that, is I do a lot of traveling. And I would tell you, so from the 20-minute perspective to request time off, think about the amount of time that it takes for you to book a hotel, register for a conference, and then also go back and book your flight. And so whenever you look at the number of hours that you spend within a month booking travel, what if it already knows you and what you're, you know, I like to sit in this row in this seat. I like to stay at this brand of or chain of hotels. I like to eat at these restaurants. And it kind of formulates that whole package for you. Think about how much more time that it would save you.
Oh, no, that's huge, especially with what we were talking about with data. All right. So we're back. We had a weird cable issue, and Kurt was explaining us how voice and travel and Alexa would help us with travel. And I kind of agree. You know, I'm getting ready, and one of the things is I love the fact that I fly the same airline. I fly the same, I stay at the same hotels. We want the points and everything else, and there's personalized service that comes with it.
That's right.
That's huge. Mm-hmm. So that's the stuff you're working with, right?
It is, and it kind of give you another little thought process here. So for the listeners that are looking at where do I go and disrupt, and you start looking at cost of transfer, you know, so what is the or barrier to transfer, whatever you want to phrase that, but it's, you know, how do you make it simpler for somebody to go from one social media site to another social media site, or travel versus travel? And we were just talking about that. I, you know, just flew a new airline for the first time this past week, and if I hadn't have understood the nuances from the person I was traveling with, then there was all kinds of extra upgrade charges and all these little different hidden fees I would have never known about. So you're right. We go with what we're familiar with. But at the same time, how do we make it simpler for somebody to move from one to another? I think that's a great opportunity for somebody to look at disruption.
Well, that, and then the other huge disruption of the market, which was really interesting, was a new FAA rule, which FAA never moves quickly. Any government agency never moves quickly. But the second that Twitter started making a huge disruption in the market and everything else, and it looks like our cable is probably going to go again. So we will bear with this podcast and hopefully survive this, and then we'll figure it out for next time. But one of the things that we were kind of going on about quite a bit was, you know, which we call FAA requires, if you're on Twitter, you have to respond to your customers on Twitter or on that social media. That is a government rule. And if you don't respond to your customers' complaints on those channels, then you get fined, which is a huge business opportunity loss, wow, whatever it is. And then you can also do upsell and things like that. And there's a lot of things there, which then how do you monitor all of that? Because that's, if you think about the scale of that, that is truly big with bots and sensors and chat and everything else. So, I mean, what are you seeing in the dashboard space for that as well?
You know, I think that a good thought process from there is something like a Hootsuite, just as an example, to where it's going out and monitoring everything that you're associated with, so to, you know, and then bringing it all back into one dashboard.
Well, it's not even that. Hootsuite's great. That's a tool, right? Mm. But then a buddy of mine made he has a patent on this, and it's really cool. Mm. Is what it does is the algorithm scans constantly about what tweets are going on and what relevant tweets, and you put in your hashtags and you put in your keywords and things, and you have a set of canned 20, 50, however many canned social media responses you have, and as soon as it starts trending at a certain percentage, then your tweet that you have automatically pops up, so you don't have to constantly monitor for this stuff.
Love it.
It's really cool. And then there was another tool we were messing with the other day that sits there and monitors all of your ads, right? So you do social media ads and you do Google AdWords and things like that, and Facebook ads specifically. This tool was, I think, very keyed in on Facebook. But it told you when your Facebook ads were no longer providing the value they should, and you should kill that ad. Mm. And so you save money. Sorry, Facebook, but you save money on spending money there, and maybe retailer your ad and relaunch your ad accordingly.
Well, and you made a good point. So it's really not necessarily taking revenue away. It's helping you be more efficient with the revenue that you're spending. So if you're spending money with Facebook, just as an example, but if it's no longer relevant for you, then it's only Facebook that's winning, and you're not creating a bipartisan, you know, win there, if you will. I don't necessarily care for the phrase win-win.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's both of you are getting a value, and when one person no longer gets that value, whether it's perceived or reality, that's what I love about that thought process, is because now I'm monitoring, but I go back and I re-increase my value, if you will.
Right. And it teaches you where to tweak and where not to tweak.
So that's right.
And the thing is that's what the new learning is, right? Again, going back to the new airline you just flew and everything else, you know, now we understand, okay, where do I need to grow and learn and build better, right?
That's
a huge part of everything that we're doing right now, especially
right.
in building all this cool new technology.
You know, I will say, as somebody that's a young early 40s guy, I'll put it that way. You know, just recently found out that I had ADD and dyslexia. And, you know, at first it was like, oh, wow, oh, that's kind of interesting. How do I fix that? And it was like, wait a minute. That's not, because most people think of it as it's a disability, and it's really not. And I started talking to a friend of mine. He's like, well, yeah, I am too. And I said, well, here's the deal. It's a differentiator. Yeah. And so whenever you look at learning, you bring up a very, very, very sensitive thing for me, because now that I know this about myself, how do I become a better learner with my differentiator? Because it's not a disability. I'm just different.
Well, no, and we both have learned that in that sense, right? Mm-hmm. It's never, I think we've never been in a better time on something like that, right? It's multi-channel. Yeah. And we always say multi-channel for about a bajillion different things, mm-hmm. right? For wireless, are you going wireless? Are you going wireless with some different differentiator? Are you talking about media and some differentiator, right? Is it social? Is it video? Is it traditional? Is it whatever? And it's the same thing with learning, right?
Yeah.
We learn in different ways, right? Mm-hmm. So with the abilities that you and I have, we're probably going to be a lot better learning auditorially and visually, something
right.
that keeps our interest
yep.
and our attention will stay.
Yeah.
And even visually, it has to be very, again, going back to dyslexia and stuff, it has to be very specific in certain manners, right? It has to be something that you can process in that way. And certain things process differently in each people.
That's right.
But then you also have other learners who are not necessarily auditorial or visual, but by practical or by something else. And so, you know, that's the other thing that's kind of interesting, is how do we apply that? And I've seen lots of studies on that one as far as AI and what we're calling AI, what we're calling machine learning, and what we're calling data. Mm. It's, and this goes back to circling all the way back to this beginning of this podcast, okay. right? Is how much data is worth it and how much data is not worth it. You don't need to sell all of your data. You don't need to sell, you know, and you may not want to sell like zero of your data. You might want to have that right mix.
Yeah.
And that right mix is also going back to the right questions, the right data, the right whatever those sets are. So, I mean, that's a huge thing to me is okay, a computer is just as much like a human. You treat the data sets correctly, and you treat what you're trying to get out of it correctly, and then you can get the right relevant information and taught to you correctly.
That's right.
So, yeah.
And I think that's probably, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's going on there. I think that's really where the biggest benefit. So to kind of come all the way back to the whole phrase IoT or Internet of Things, I think really at the end of the day, it's how do I take a sensor and benefit from that sensor, whatever that is. You know, the monetization part of it, you know, there's all kinds of different ways you can monetize that. You know, we could sit here and talk about that for hours. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's really what is the value or the benefit that you're creating for the person that's going to use whatever that device or whatever that solution is. And I think that we start out on the B2B side, to your point. You know, we start out, let them spend the money, but the consumers really are the ones that benefit in the end.
Right, and then it's vice versa, too. I mean, I think it's a full circular thing, right? So, circular thing, and as much as I'm terrible at pronouncing. Right, so if you think about it, it's two key things now. I usually only have one example, which was the iPhone changed the BlackBerry and all the enterprise devices, because once the iPhone came out, it's like so much easier to use.
Right.
And then everybody went to work and they said, I want my email on this thing.
Right.
And it drove all of IT nuts.
Yes.
And everybody hated it. And then, you know, now look at it. iPhone's one of the more secure platforms out there. It has a lot of security features baked in and all sorts of other cool things.
Yep.
Alexa is doing the exact same thing.
Mm.
It's what we talked about earlier, which is, I want to use my voice to do the stupid simple things, right?
Right?
So when I wake up in the morning, I usually say, Alexa, set my thermostat to whatever, or, you know, I'm awake now. So, because you may wake up different times or whatever, or want it just a little bit warmer or colder in the morning or whatever it is. And now you can say, hey, Alexa, get me ready for work, or, you know, get me time off, or book my flight to my client, XYZ, and it's in this, and then it automatically books your co-working space, your meeting room, your hotel, and your trip tickets, and you know, as soon as you land, you set your Lyft or Uber up or whatever your rideshare service is, and you go, and you're set, ready to go.
That's right.
So it's cool. So that you're right. I mean, Internet of Things, and that's the other thing, is we focused for the last 2 years on Internet of Things being so focused on hardware, and I didn't even think about the fact of the implementation. We kind of cut out that word of internet.
Right.
And internet is an old, again, going back to, it's an old technology.
Yeah. 1969.
You and I grew ARPANET, yeah. Yeah. You and I grew up on the first dial-ups and really, truly when it was kind of still kind of sort of taking hold and what is this email address thing and I have email and not. And now we're going to something completely different, right? And so that's the other interesting thing about it. So, you know, I think this year we're going to actually finally meld the two together. I hope so. So, okay, we're coming to the end. I've gotten you for a great amount of time. Where can people find you online? Clearly, social media is a thing you're doing. So, where's your website? What's going on with you? Where can people find you?
Yep. So, you know, it's a good thing and a bad thing that I'm inundated right now. So the website does not exist on purpose. but you know, I've got a company that I work under that's Accelerated Technology Consulting. So if anybody wants to find me, there, you know, LinkedIn, you know, it's Kurt Kelly DFW, KurtKelly DFW, and Twitter is at Kurt Kelly. I will tell you that I do a lot of monitoring and a lot of, you know, connections through LinkedIn, but I don't do a lot of posting, just because there's a lot of customer, you know, sensitive information and you know, working behind the scenes. So, you know, more than happy to sit down and have conversations with people that are looking for their direction. I love doing mentoring. I've got several people that I mentor, you know, just through thought processes, you know, just because, you know, we've got a lot of scars, you know, through a long time in this space. And, you know, to be able to share something with somebody to keep them from having to get a bruise or a bump along the way is always a great thing for me. So, you know, Kurt, K-U-R-T, at acceleratedtc.com. And it's a little bit different spelling. It's EXCELERATEDTC.com on purpose, because I want people to excel, not necessarily always accelerate.
Right. So, it's the ready, aim, fire, not the ready,
right.
Fire, aim.
That's right. So always happy to share some knowledge with somebody to help them benefit in this space.
That's fantastic. I will put all of that in the show notes. And thank you again.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jax.
Yeah.
It's been great.